America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores. The
stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio, Special Operations Military News, and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Welcome to another edition of Soft Web Radio. I'm your host, Rad. And I'm coming to you from Salt Lake City today, and I have a very special guest all the way from the United Kingdom in England. I have Anthony Stephen Malone, former para regiment, which is a parachute regiment. And those guys were created, I think, about 80 years ago by Winston Churchill to be what are called shock troops.
Yep, that's about right. Yep, well, yeah, I served in the parachute regiment, served in 4th Battalion when I was 17 years old, 1988. Then in the early 90s, went to Depot Power again. Dunpee Company for the second time, passed it, went to 3 Power, spent about 3.5 years in 3 Power as well. Then I was fortunate enough to be able to, all over the world, basically. I'd done a short tour in Northern Ireland. We'd done Kenya, Cyprus, overseeing 4 Power, spent time in Germany. Then came out, and as a proud veteran, started doing a lot of work in the veteran community.
Yeah, it's needed over there. You guys, as a veteran community, get together with a lot of different charities to make it happen for veterans who are not able to afford things and take care of it. It's a really prideful thing. When I've gone over to visit, I just want to say, you know, applaud to you for dedication.
It's actually good to see a lot of different companies and private organizations, a lot of small groups here. It's exactly the same as what you've got over in America. A lot of veterans get together and help the veterans, other veterans that are not as fortunate as some of us.
Yeah, correct. Now, you being a veteran, you've jumped out of an airplane. Have you ever had any type of a crazy incident jumping out of an airplane, being in the parachute regiment and jumping? Did you ever have an issue where you're like, oh, what do I do right here?
I think pretty much everyone who's ever jumped has always had one or two near misses. I'm fortunate enough, I've done over 100 static line jumps. Only had one really bad one. That was in Fort Power in Germany. Went out the side of the C-130 Hercules, ended up going through someone's rigging lines, came down upside down with a container that was actually stuck to my legs at the time. Managed to jettison the container, get myself squared away, managed to come down feet first, just in time.
Just in time. Wow. Harrowing story right there. And I know you have so many, and it's my duty to ask you these questions and get you to tell me some stories. And I know that there's something that's really being talked about right now that has a lot of, you've been all over the circuits. You've been talking about how you were captured in Afghanistan by the Taliban for a period of time. You know, a lot of my listeners may not realize that you are a former CIA operator. You're a, you know, British soldier, American ally. And here you are in Afghanistan, boots on the ground. Take me there.
Yeah, well, I was the same as a lot of veterans across America and the United Kingdom and obviously the world. About a year ago, 18 months ago, we started seeing everything unfold in Afghanistan. Well, I'd like to point out at this point, I was retired for about 10 years or more. I was out of the military, out of intelligence services. I was enjoying my nice and peace and quietful life with my family and just purely doing work to help the veterans. Now, like a lot of veterans, like I said, across America and Britain, we saw the events unfolding, and it didn't sit well with a lot of us. A lot of people have their opinions about this, so I'm going to keep this fairly politically correct. We started to help a lot of the former members of the Afghan army that had supported and helped the British forces and had worked very closely with the American forces, some of them for 20 plus years as well. And they were stuck in Afghanistan. Now, I started receiving telephone calls from some people who I had actually kept in touch with on a personal basis. These included generals, colonels, senior agents that were working. These are people who were Afghan nationals that were working with our coalition forces. Now, I actually know some of these people, and they are my very close friends and other families, and I know the children. The amount of desperation I could hear, and these are very professional individuals as well. They were stranded, stuck, couldn't get out of Afghanistan. And I thought, you know something, we tried doing it by remote control. We got some people out before I even set foot in Afghanistan by using the old network, which a lot of veterans did. All we did was we picked up the old satellite phones. I rang my old colleagues in American intelligence, American in the military, in the British Special Forces as well. I said, right, gentlemen, we have a problem here. We have people. Can anyone help us here? It was literally as... many of your listeners will know, it was the call went out to veterans. So basically, with 24 hours of that, we had the tickets booked and we were en route into Afghanistan. When everyone else was trying to get out of Afghanistan, we went into Afghanistan. Right. Yeah, and it was a harrowing time at that point because nobody knew what was going on. Absolute chaos, tens of thousands of people trying to get evacuated out the airport. We had the anniversary yesterday of the suicide attack at the airport, where a lot of brave soldiers and civilians died in that attack. And a lot of people just thought, yeah, 13, you know, something.
I think.
Got out of body armor, went in there to try and make a difference. The sheer numbers that we found on arriving in country were staggering. Went into one meeting in Jalalabad to basically identify four British nationals. That meeting ended up being 74 British nationals and more. 74 identified, we got proof of life, got them to hold the British passport up, take a photograph of that. The numbers were staggering. And we are not an organisation. We are not an intelligence agency or the Foreign Office. We couldn't move everybody, but we moved a lot of people through Taliban checkpoints, through Taliban-run areas as well, all over the country. Got them to safe houses and made sure they were as safe as possible. Yeah.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
That's amazing. Now, when you went over there, was the chaos already kind of unfolding? Were you there? Did you mention you were there just prior to the suicide attack? And we all saw the images of, like, you know, the C-5 or whatever, the Galaxy aircraft taking off. Everybody was clung to the landing gear, right? Were you there before that, or were you there right around that same time frame?
I was actually there just after, but we were making our moves to get people out, not in Kabul. I was getting people out away from Kabul. Seemed to be everyone, all the focus was on Kabul. Now, while that was happening, an opportunity arose that we might be able to get some people out quietly, like other veteran groups did, all working together for the greater good, get people out. But everyone was watching the news. They saw the absolute carnage and desperation unfolding at Kabul in the actual airport. So, and that went on for a period of time. But what people don't realize is when the TV cameras left and the official evacuation had ended, it still continued. The veteran group stayed there, boots on the ground, risking their lives to help as many people get out as possible.
Yeah, it's a selfless act. You just seem to be in that game. You're dedicated to that type of mission with your mindset. And I think that you have a pretty positive mindset to say, hey, I can go over here and do this. You know, you're not saying this is a hurdle. You're saying, how do I get over that hurdle? And you're trying to help these people in there. You're a hand reaching down, right? Like trying to help them up.
I think it was important because a lot of the veterans, all of us felt exactly the same. It didn't fit well. It's the oldest one in history. You don't leave a man behind and you honor the pledge. When you say you're going to help somebody, you roll up your sleeves and you do whatever has to be done to help them. Now, sometimes politics can get in the way of that. Fortunately, veterans, we don't have to abide by the political spectrum, for want of a better word. My personal opinion is I don't get involved in politics. I've never let politics stand in the way of me saving anybody's life. I'll deal with that afterwards. And a lot of the veterans, all of us, it's the same as well.
Yeah, that's what it takes, you know, that mentality. And so when you get over to Afghanistan, is this the same time frame that they had snatched you up and tried to hold you for so long? Did they know your resume?
No. This is when things got interesting. I'd actually been on the ground in Afghanistan for 3 months, and literally a couple of days later, I was meant to leave Afghanistan. But I was looking at a house to rent, which was the former British ambassador's residence in Kabul that I was going to rent from the Afghan who owns it, and we were going to use that as a kind of a office stroke kind of guest house.
Base camp.
Base camp, yeah. Now, we had all the right identification. We had entry stamps in our passports. I had a letter of the Chambers of Commerce. I still have that particular letter as well. Now, we were there cleanly. We weren't working anything majorly covertly. We were there. I was dressed as an Afghan. I had had meetings with senior members of the Taliban. I'd had meetings in the presidential palace with senior members of the Taliban. I'd also members of the Akhani network as well that I've known for over like 12 years anyway. So people knew we were there, and they knew we weren't there to be against Afghanistan. I am not pro-Taliban at all. Anyone who knows me will know that. But I am pro-Afghanistan. I think the people of Afghanistan could do with a bit of a break, given the fact that that country has known war 40 years. So if you think about that, any kids or people who are under 40 have never known a day of peace. So hopefully,
not war,
calm their heads will now prevail. But I'm not going to get into the politics of all this. We went in there to help vulnerable people. Two or three people ended up being 20 or 30. We ended up moving around over 400 families, getting them to safety. It wasn't a job to me and some of the lads who I was with who were under me. It was actually our duty, as well as I'm concerned, as a veteran. When our governments dropped the ball, the veteran community picked up the ball, ran with it. Because if they didn't, and the veterans in America, particularly American Britain, if they hadn't have done what they did, there would be thousands of dead Afghans now in Afghanistan.
Right.
So it's so important that people realize if the vet community and have done what they did at that point, it would have went very, very wrong. So credit due where credit is due. And I would like to say a massive thank you out there to the veteran community across the United States and Great Britain and other countries as well, like Canada and Australia. Everyone got together and helped, did whatever had to be done. Forget what regiment you were in, what country. They worked together for the greater good. And there's a lot of young people, a lot of children out there now in safe countries that would not be there if it was not for like the veterans out there.
100%. That's commendable. You know, here in Salt Lake City, I own a tactical supply store, and we sell, you know, combat vests, plate carriers, gloves, knee pads, accessories for all of that. And all of a sudden, when this was kicking off, I started getting a couple new customers who were like, "Hey, we just want these." He just took all my plate carriers, and I just said, "Good luck."
Yeah.
And I already knew, and I knew, and he kind of let me know, and I just said, "Good luck with everything," because they got homies, friends, comrades who were living okay until that whole tornado of evacuation and politics happened to Afghanistan all of a sudden, you know. And then as we're sitting here having our tea, it's just coiling up and you're just like, wait, this isn't right. You know, there's a shift in the force, Luke. Something's not right. And so off you, you know, have to go and upset, you know, uproot yourself, and your veterans are uprooting themselves and their lives of their families, and they're the breadwinners, or they're making, you know, they're the ones that fix the house up when, you know, they have to at home. And now they're pulling themselves out again from that normalcy, you know? And so it wasn't just Afghanistan. It was everyone is Afghanistan. That's my opinion. Yeah. Everyone should say we are all Afghanistan. We shouldn't be at Afghanistan's throat. Afghanistan has nothing to be at our throats about. We should just be one people.
Yeah, it was amazing to see so many different people, men and women from all over the place coming together for the greater good. And I think now it is officially the biggest civilian evacuation since World War II. And the veterans, if you think about how many veterans went out there and the amount of experience and knowledge
their
own networks that they have, you put all that together, it's something very unusual. Hopefully we'll never see anything like that have to be put back together again. But it was something remarkable to see, and it was so proud to be a little part of that as well. Obviously, I got pulled off the Taliban. We pushed it a little bit too much. We were helping maybe too many people. And I got drifted with some other British nationals and an American, because elements within the Taliban weren't targeting that much the people who were leaving. They were targeting the people who were helping them to leave. I thought that was quite interesting.
Right.
Now, we did get some support from within the Taliban, because in their eyes, they didn't want all these people to actually die or be killed in Afghanistan. It would have made them look bad. So it was in their interest, really, if you think about it, for them to get these people out. But there was an element, and there still is an element in Afghanistan, which is the extremist element, or the extreme of the extreme, who are targeting a lot of individuals. And I was one of the fortunate ones. Yeah, I got picked up 190 days, 6 months, kept in a Taliban underground interrogation centre in Kabul. Yeah, I was given a hard time. My feet got ripped. I ended up getting six fractured ribs, concussion, hit with a wooden slat, cold water over me. It's one of those things. It happens. Big boys' rules. You're going to play in the playground with the big boys, you got to be willing to take the hits if they come. I don't have any regrets at all. Did what had to be done. I'm here now. I'm still helping people over there in a humanitarian context, as a lot of people are. But I thought it was interesting, because when I was in the underground interrogation centre, I got to talk to a lot of a lot of the Taliban, there was a few that weren't very good. My interrogator was a young guy. I'm not going to mention his name at the moment, but he was a young guy, very experienced, as in he thought he was experienced. In reality, he hardly had any experience at all. He spoke a couple of words of English, but the problem was, years ago, he had had a run-in British Marines in the south of Afghanistan. Me being a former British military veteran, I got the brunt of that. So that made it interesting. Yep. But I'm pleased to say, yeah, he tortured me, he gave me an hard time, but I gave him just as much attitude back, end off. I'm not one of these guys who's going to sit in a corner and cry. Ain't going to happen. So I did actually give him a lot of crap, which really I shouldn't have, and I might have got a couple of beatings for calling him a bit of an idiot. But hey, it's one of those things, isn't it? Sometimes you've got to stand up, you draw a line in the sand, and that's it. That's just the way it is. The actual afternoon before I got released, your viewers will think this one's an absolute blinder, I tell you. I didn't know I was going to get released. Everyone else was told. I get pulled upstairs. He starts off the conversation. Instead of telling me, by the way, it's all good news now. You're getting released. You're going back to England. Not a problem. He didn't do that. He started the conversation off with having a go at me, having a go at military veterans, and having a go at my country. Huge mistake. So then I just ripped straight into him, and it went a bit wrong at that point. He threw all the glasses up off the table at Smash. He started going into a rant. So it's the first time I've ever done it. I actually squared up to me interrogator, nose to nose, and I thought, you know something, mate? All your guys are going to beat me again, but I'm going to nail you. But I didn't.
Yeah. Actually. Oh, yeah.
The heads prevailed. I sat down. His bodyguard got me a glass of water to kind of defuse it. Then at the end of the conversation, sure, he says, you were going to be released tomorrow, like all your friends are, but you're not. You're staying. Instead of antagonizing it even more, I stood up and I said to him,
yeah,
thank you so much for letting the rest of the guys go. It's a good thing. And I look forward to spending some quality time with you in the future. At this point, the guy went mad. His head came off, mate, I tell you. I stood up and walked out the room. I haven't seen him since. It's just one of those things in the day. You treat people as you expect to be treated. He wasn't a nice kind of guy. Well, it's one of those things. It happens. But like I said, no regrets. Job done. Life saved.
No regrets. Yeah, right. And, you know, that's exactly what you did, man. It's amazing. I'm speechless. Yes, drink.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on,
but we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
What's going on in Afghanistan? Now, everyone thinks the Taliban government is a cohesive government. It's not. It's gone back to what I saw back in like the late 90s, when it was literally a lot of little groups coming together in networks under the umbrella of the Taliban. So everyone thinks the Taliban is one cohesive government. It's not. In the building, an example, in the building that we were in was a three-story building. There was a different tribe and ethnic group of the Taliban on each of those floors. That's just the building that I was in. You imagine that across Kabul, then across the whole of Afghanistan. We witnessed so much infighting. Unbelievable. Different people, they were literally fighting each other. The reason why a lot of the Talibs are carrying all the heavy weapons all the time is to defend themselves against other Taliban groups as well. It's definitely...
Sure, it's just like the gang wars,
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Exactly. Taliban gang wars. Ah, it is. It is. It's just all under the name of the Taliban. They don't have a cohesive leadership. They're all just like Lord of the Flies under the name of the Taliban, and there are all these little pods trying to keep their fire going, and it's like, oh, you got the fire starter, we're gonna get it from you. Yeah. You know, it's like Lord, yeah, that's what I'm under, that's what you're saying, that's what it seems like. And I want to see the women go to school and have to be able to not march down the streets for their rights to be able to be themselves and not have to, you know. And they are, those women are powerful. And when are we going to realize that as humans, that the women are the most powerful people in this world? Maybe that's what scares people.
Remember that the women, the young girls in Afghanistan and the young men, most of these people are now educated. They all have phones, smartphones, internet. They don't want to go back to living in the dark ages. They want to progress. They want to better themselves. Young girls want to go to school, want to go to university. It's in Afghanistan's interest if they let the girls be educated, because they will need female doctors, nurses, they'll need lawyers, they'll need all these people. So there's actually, I've seen it, there's an element within the Taliban who are fighting the extremist element in the Taliban to let the girls go to school. We've got the, it needs to be an Afghan solution to an Afghan problem. We in the West cannot get involved in this.
Agreed.
They need to deal with this themselves. No.
And hopefully they've been seeded and nurtured for the, I know it's been a wartime for the last 20 years over there, right? Especially, you know, with the 9/11 kicking off and everybody focusing on the Tora Bora Mountains and everything. And then you have these young girls who have grown up in that culture who have been able, though, to go to school, to be themselves, to experience life, not under that oppressive thumb so much, but go to school and work, you know, and not just be in the house per se. And so these girls with smartphones are smart. These girls with smartphones will be doctors, politicians, lawyers, advocates, humanitarians. You know, it's what Afghanistan needs. It's what America needs. It's what England needs. We all need powerful women in powerful positions. Like, you know, truly to help.
Absolutely. I think they've got an untapped reserve of experience, of knowledge. The young people in Afghanistan are making the older tribal leaders now feel very uncomfortable, because these young people are educated, and they are literally the future of Afghanistan. The question is, are the older ones going to let the younger ones move up the actual chain? Because if they do, you might find the West won't have to intervene here. The younger generation in Afghanistan will. So be very interesting in the next 6 months from now. I think the next 6 months will be very, very important for the people of Afghanistan. And I hope they pick the right way. It's at a crossroads now. And if they get it wrong, it will end up in civil war and a massive armed resistance movement, which is not good for Afghanistan. They've been through all this in the past. The question is now, are they going to learn? There is an opportunity here as well for the West to... I understand that people don't want to recognize the Taliban as a government. I get it. I'm not here to talk about that.
Right.
That's political.
Right.
But there's an opportunity here to sit down with certain key members, not all of them, key members that could be identified, that not extremist, and they can have a conversation. Most of the Taliban Haqqani, the leadership I've spoken to, understand and speak perfect English. And I mean perfect. They don't need interpreters, okay? And they understand the English language. Most of them have been educated in Western countries. A lot of people don't even realize that, okay? And the pen is mightier than the sword, because can we afford not to talk to these people and try and deal with the extremism? That's what we have to think about, because the last thing that anyone wants to see in a year's time is American or British boots on the ground again in Afghanistan. We don't want that.
No. And the people do need to take action on themselves. It's been said from a lot of political, you know, heads out there that have said, you know, that run countries, you know, we want to let Afghanistan try to figure itself out, wring itself out. If we can empower the people to be powerful, then the people can be, you know, their own everything. And so I wish the best for Afghanistan. I really do.
I think there's a lot of people out there who are watching this very carefully. Now, the politicians need to start to listen to former military commanders. An example, David Petraeus, he knows what he's talking about. He doesn't just write reports, he's been there, seen it, got the T-shirt. People of that ilk, the politicians need to bring people like that in as their advisor. Yeah, he has. But people of that ilk, they need to be listened to because they can get it back. And yeah, so I think it'll be interesting. I think the politicians have just got to, on this occasion, don't do what they would normally do and just say what is the correct thing to say at that time because of politics. They need to look at the situation, and if we don't help or get involved in some way to either mentor or talk to some element within the Afghan government, it's going to go very bad over there. The warning signs are there, but it hasn't crossed the point of no return yet. But within 6 months, if this isn't dealt with by the beginning of next year, it'll either start going well or it'll start looking like a civil war again. I just had to say who's got the T-shirt because I thought it was appropriate.
It is totally appropriate. It's like he went to the concert. He got the shirt at the concert. You're talking about General David Petraeus here, you know, the guy went to the show and he got the shirt. I think that's the best reference I've ever heard on this entire podcast. I've been doing this. He got the shirt. It's like everybody's got clusters, bro. Everybody's got medals, but he got the shirt. I love it. I love it. And I love your positivity too. And it's really, you're breeding that to me about Afghanistan. I want to be positive as well about it, you know, and I know that they have strife. I know they get their flat tires. I know that they have to get out and change that stuff, just like we do over here in America or in England. We all have things that make our country, like, you know, have to pull over and fix itself. Okay. So now's the time to fix yourself. You don't want to destroy your infrastructure. You don't want to destroy any type of 1, 2, 3G that you have, 4, 5G coming. You don't want to destroy any of that. You want to, that's why I'd imagine even the younger Taliban dudes, you know, like in their 20s, 30s, they've got to also be of that same nomenclature, that same, like, we want the internet. We want to have that attitude because they're using it too.
Oh, they are. I think one of the major problems at the moment is, and the Taliban don't know how to deal with this, is there is an exodus of young, educated people leaving Afghanistan. That is not good. There is a brain drain that's going on there. And I've actually spoken to some people who have been relocated to America and the United Kingdom. And these are Afghans who were brought out during the evacuation. And they are watching very carefully what happens, because they would love to return to Afghanistan in the future. No one has mentioned this or spoken about this. And it's a very important point, because Afghans are very proud. They're a very proud people. They are a warring nation. It's the way they are from Alexander the Great until now. A lot of them want to go back, but they need to feel safe, secure, and they want a future in their own country. So instead of everyone thinking, right, can we get another 150,000 people out of Afghanistan? Why are people asking the question, well, how can we get 150,000 people back to Afghanistan? Then you wouldn't have to take everyone out in the first place. So
you'd be just bringing them home.
Yeah, 20 steps ahead. There's been a problem. Yep. It's happened. The Taliban are in power. Nothing we can do about any of that. Can we help influence how they govern their people? That is the thing. We can't threaten them or use military action. It doesn't work. Can we influence? Can we show them the way, for want of a better word? Because I don't think it. Like,
that's
I've spoken to the head. I've sat and had a cup of tea with the head of Afghan intelligence and senior members of the government. And the questions that they were asking me over the tea, they weren't, this was after the whole interrogation thing, and they knew that we were going to be released at some point. They were asking, what can they do? What can they do to talk to Western countries? I think the problem is the Taliban leadership, a lot of them, don't know how to. They've gone from an insurgency to a government very quickly. And they haven't quite made the transition mindset from an insurgency to a ruling government. They are responsible now for the people of Afghanistan, all of them, all the tribal systems.
All of them.
Okay?
Right.
That is the bit that they are really struggling with at the moment. So beating them with a stick isn't going to work. A carrot might. How can we help? Because if we don't and we get this wrong...
How can we show them? Yeah.
Exactly. How can we show them? Can we mentor them? One of the questions I was asked, and you could have picked me off the floor on this one, was senior members of the Afghan government, Taliban, asking me, do you think it would be possible to get some people from the West to come in and help mentor? I was asked that, right? No one's even thought about that, okay? And these were very serious individuals as well. They need a little bit of help, because if we get this wrong, and there's a civil war, an armed conflict, and it spills over into neighboring countries, Pakistan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, all right? It ain't good for anybody. There's a little opportunity here. Cooler heads have to prevail. Don't forget, I am a veteran. I'm the same as a lot of veterans out there. I've lost a lot of friends in Afghanistan. It would be nice to see the country do a little bit of a turn for the unusual and actually start to stand on its own two feet. There's going to be people out there that we're going to disagree. The problem they're going to have is, do we want to see Afghanistan as a war zone for the next 20 years again, or do we want to see it calm down? Then it won't be that much of a threat to us in the West. So people have got to take a step back here and have a think about that one.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Do you think that Afghanistan can become a tourist destination one day? Do you think that the possibilities of what we're talking about could be, hey, you know, I'm going to go check out some of Afghanistan on a level where I don't have to fear by going to Afghanistan and bringing that revenue, right?
Yeah.
I mean, is that a good hope?
A lot of people will be amazed if they do a Google search on Afghanistan, 1960s, 1970s. Look at the photographs. It was a tourist destination, very westernized. It's done it once. My opinion, I'm going to go against a lot of people by saying this, it could happen again. The natural resources in Afghanistan are staggering. It can stand on its own two feet, but it needs help.
Right.
Now, if we don't help them, someone else will. And it'll most probably be people who are anti the West.
Yes, and to see, you know, any good happen, they would rather see good for them happen and their agenda. And it's not so much an agenda for me. I just want to say, I would like to just see the people of Afghanistan, you know, become entrepreneurs of their own properties and, you know, create their own amusement facilities that they like to do and, you know, grow that from their culture to make it, you know, sought after. And I want to go there and experience that culture, you know, and, you know, one humanity. I know there's bad actors, Anthony, everywhere, okay? In America, you got people that are doing bad things. You've got people in all different places doing bad things. And if we continue to focus on that, that is what the brand becomes of that environment. And if we can show the positives that are also happening, we can show that brand change. We can change it. It's all this narrative that's being put out there. It's like, you want to see bad things? You go looking for bad things, you're going to find bad things. But if you can look for something good, you might just...
You might find something good. Now,
that's it.
Out of everybody, 190 days underground interrogation center, technically, I should have the right home with the way I was treated. Sometimes I have a bad day. I have got a home. 99% of the time, I don't. The way I look at it was, a couple of people overstepped their authority. I took a few beatings. It happens. I'm a big boy. I look beyond that. I'm not going to judge a country or a government based on a few individuals. Mm-hmm. So if I can do that, politicians should pull the finger out, get to the table with a pen, and have a chat with these guys.
Right.
Because we don't have anything to lose by talking to certain an element within the Afghan government at the moment. We have nothing to lose at all. We do have a lot to gain, though, because we actually, the actual Western politicians made a right mess of Afghanistan. That's basically it. But how can they put that right now? All right. It's like I said, everyone wants to get people out of Afghanistan. Why not help the government a little bit there in mentorship or in some way? I don't know how it can be done though. And people can return or stay in Afghanistan. We need putting pressure doesn't work on Afghans ever. I've been in and off out of Afghanistan for over 22 years. My colleague who I was with has been there for 45 years. That's over 65 years experience in Afghanistan. Just two of us, okay? Now, we know what we are talking about. So talking to these people, and you know yourself, you sit down with an Afghan, you drink a lot of tea. End of. All right, mate. That's one of those things.
Well, that's right here. It's right here. Just. Yes, exactly. And everybody wants to have a nice cup of tea.
Yeah. And,
you know, leadership above us tell us what to do, right? They, like, leadership comes in and says, you're going to now fight these people.
Yeah.
That's what leadership does. It just turns you into that. You can think about it. I don't know. I don't know what to say. I'm not trying to say that I can solve all the world's problems in the snap of a finger on this Soft Rep Radio episode, but I'll tell you what, if it works and we can all just get along, then what the hell, dude? Let's have a cup of tea together, all right? Because I'm down with that.
Now, it's good. It's important. Right, I think people have got to look at this now, 20 steps ahead. How can we help resolve it? It's the year anniversary. Too much blood and ink has been spilt on Afghanistan. What we want to look at now, where do we want to be with this? In 10 years, 20 years' time. Let's turn a negative into a positive. The world's press has got to take responsibility here as well. They very rarely put a positive story out on anything to do with Afghanistan, the women, the children, or anything, right? It's always negative, negative, negative. They are feeding the narrative, okay? Some journalists need to go back to school and do some proper journalism for once, all right? There is positive out there.
Right, right.
Find it, all right? It's possible. There is some good journals out there as well. I'm actually friends with a few of them who are in Afghanistan. They actually stayed, okay? Risked their life to stay. And now they're getting some good stories out there. But the major networks jump on it. As soon as something negative happens, they jump on it. If you think about this, when was the last time you actually saw a positive story on Afghanistan? You'd be very hard done by to think of that one.
I'm trying to create it.
Yeah.
I am right now. This is me with my microphone and with you to be able to say, you know, if anybody respects your opinion and is listening to this in senior leadership positions and they're like, how come Rad and Anthony are having this conversation? I'm cool with it. Then maybe they should hit you up. I'm sure somebody's got your phone number and they can give you a call and say, Anthony, let's get this going.
It would not be difficult. I'm not saying that I am doing this, but hypothetically,
I'm not.
I was talking to some of the leadership in Afghanistan now, all right? It wouldn't be hard to get two sets of people together in a mutual country to have a conversation. Some of it may already be happening. Some good work has been done, all right, by Western countries, America and the United Kingdom, and European countries. But more can be done and needs to be done. Because every effort we make now, we might not see the fruit of that effort right away, but we will see the positivity coming out of this in months and years to come as well. And we need to stem the tide of bad press. Let's start looking at the positive. How can we do this? How can we get people back to Afghanistan? Because we really don't want to see British and American troops back on the ground again now. And that's my opinion.
You know, it's it. And that's what I want is your specific opinion. 65 years between the two of you and your friend is a lot of experience in Afghanistan. You have been through, you have been outside the wire. You, you know what's going on there. It's just, and I'm sure that there's things that you are privy to that are happening that I hope is for the best for Afghanistan that I don't know about, you know? I just,
well, there's some
I hope the best. That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, you and I go back. We met years ago at the Remembrance Rumble with Big Phil at the boxing match for veterans. Again, talking about veterans getting together for veterans. You know, everybody from all over the world came to the UK to do those boxing matches, Navy SEALs versus SAS and the paras. Roger Hilden, right? I think he was a captain in the paras at one point. Roger, I got to give him a shout out. And his kids, always a great guy. You know, I'm thankful for these relationships. And if anybody realizes that you're a dad and a neighbor, a guy that'll shovel the sidewalk of your neighbor with snow, if yours is done, and then you go and do this, right? I talk about how the soccer dad here in the States is your National Guard military member. And you just look at the soccer dad and he's going to go be a Green Beret now. Okay.
Yeah, it's all good fun.
So, you know,
I'd give a big shout out to Phil Campion, the Rumble. I don't know when the next one is, but we need one because it's great getting the Americans, the Brits together. Excellent, excellent fight. So, yeah.
It was proper. It's a legend. It's legendary. It's like, you know, Big Phil in there with, everybody like Hellier, Matt Hellier, and, you know, all the guys that were fighting. It's such a cool experience. And I got to meet Ben Parkson, you know, who was there, the wounded soldier of England, you know, the most wounded soldier, right? And I drank out of someone's leg.
Yeah, it's all good, but it was one of those evenings that is positive. Everything about it, positive, entertaining evening, the boys in the ring, maximum respect for anybody who's got the balls to get on the pair of gloves and get into the ring. End of. Anyone who else has got the balls.
End of story.
Don't comment about it. Yeah.
So awesome. Now, do you have some mentions that you want to talk about before I let you go? I know I've had you for so long. Do you have like your articles, your books, or your websites that you want to shout out? And then we'll make sure it gets posted up when it's written out on the website.
Yeah, anyone who wants to know anything about me, if you type Anthony Stephen Malone into Google, I'm all over it. My website, anthonymalone.me.uk. It's got me book links and that on there. I've done 5 books at the moment. One of those books was when I was an embedded combat photographer with 101st Airborne Division in Iraq under David Petraeus. That's why I've got Screaming Eagle behind me. And I speak about a lot of things in my books. I've got a new book coming out the 8th of September called Hostage Evacuation, about Afghanistan, about the evacuation of veterans. It's not the kind of book people are going to be expecting. It's not an action book. It is very to the point about as I actually talk. I've written it myself. It's not polished. The people who have actually read it up to now, the advanced copies, have said it's pretty good. They've learned a lot from it. It gives a massive shout out to the veteran community as well, because there's some good work being done, both here and America as well. One of the most important things I would like to say, if I'm allowed to, is if you're a veteran out there,
please,
who's struggling at the moment, all right? We all go through bad days. I get them, Brad gets them. We all do, all right? If you're having a bad day or you've had a couple of beers, couple of drinks, pick up the phone, speak to one of your old colleagues or a friend. You're not alone out there. Remember that, okay? We've all lost a lot of friends. Rad, do know a couple of the guys I know in America who have passed away as well, all right?
Yeah.
You're not alone.
Yes.
Pick up the dog and go on. And I mean that, okay? And that's all I've got to say.
Yeah.
Everyone stays safe. Rad, it's been emotional, and it's been a pleasure as always, mate.
Hey, I look forward to it, okay, when I come back over. I just got back from London. I hung out with Phil, you know, Big Phil. He took me over to Portsmouth, and I got to see Gary Weaving and everything down there. So next time I'll put you on the calendar, and we'll link up, and we'll also go to, like, Claridge's and have a nice tea party.
Exactly, brother. Don't ever forget it.
All right, bro. I appreciate it. Well, with that said, thank you for listening to Soft Rep Radio. I just want to say shout out to Brandon Webb for giving me the opportunity to host this each and every week. I want to thank my guest, Anthony Stephen Malone, and all of the veterans out there. Stay strong, stay sharp, and if you need something, slide into my DMs, and I'll talk you through it, okay? Don't freak out. And we'll talk to you later. Peace.
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on,
but we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.